just had to be 5 miles ahead. And, well, you know, we all learned that if you're black, you have to be 10 times better than white people.
So you didn't just face but one death sentence, you faced three.
Right. No, but Condoleezza Rice wanted to be 10 times better than all black people, too. So, and I don't think she grew up with that sense that of the power of community. She grew up with a sense of the need to stand out as an individual. And I think that's the fundamental difference.
The legendary activist and scholar Dr. Angela Davis. We'll return to her in a moment to talk about challenging capitalism, today's youth movements fighting for justice, and what gives her hope.
O'clock, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Democracy Now! Got started a little late, so it's going to continue until it's over.
Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return to my conversation with former Black Panther Angela Davis, professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz, I spoke with her in October in Washington, D.C., at the cultural hub and restaurant Busboys and Poets.
You go back 50 years, you look at 1968, but and you look at today, how does it compare from the protests at San Francisco State and Columbia University, the protests in Paris and France, the level of organizing, of course, that year, the assassination of both Dr. King and Robert Kennedy, but the level of organizing that took place then and what's happening right now, does this give you hope?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think what gives me hope is the extent to which young organizers have been able to build on the work of those who came before them. And I am so impressed by young organizers and Dream Defenders, Black Lives Matter, Black Youth Project 100, Surge. You know, white people are really beginning to change significantly. I mean, I'm remembering that. You know, it used to be that we assumed racism was just about attitude, right? And so the only way you can deal with a racist is to say, oh, you should go to an unlearning racism workshop. Or, you remember, I mean, this is what people who made these public, these racist statements publicly were then asked to atone and to learn. And there was no sense of the extent to which racism is so deeply embedded in the structures and the institutions of this society. And I think now there is a popular understanding of the fact that you can't just assume that by finding Jason Van Dyke guilty of the murder of Laquan McDonald, that that's going to change the situation. The Chicago Police Department will continue to be as racist as it was before. And so this notion of abolition has really, really taken hold. And I don't envy young activists and organizers because they have to deal with so much more. Things were so much simpler for us. And that's because we had no idea how complicated these issues really are. I often point out the fact that when we began, when we were calling for black freedom, it was always freedom for the black man. You know, and women were doing most of the organizing, and the women who were doing the organizing didn't even realize that we were excluding ourselves through our very vocabulary from the terrain of freedom, and that's no longer the case. The role of gender and sexuality, I think, you know, queer approaches are becoming more mainstream in terms of organizing queer feminist approaches, and that's exciting. Even though I know the world always appears to be so chaotic, and sometimes we can't see a way out, but I think the work that we have to do is to guarantee that we pass down a legacy to the next group, the next generation. And that's our only hope for achieving change. And I see the work that young activists are doing today and the way in which they're also called, because you are not young that long. You know, many people are under the impression that, you know, youth is an eternal. It doesn't happen that way. Before you know it, you will have aged out of youth. So it's so important to train others to share. And with each generation, it becomes richer and more interesting and more complicated. I am sometimes amazed listening to young activists who speak so fluently about the ways in which homophobia, transphobia, not only affect those who identify as trans or as LGBTQ, but it's about the entire world. The challenging of the gender binary has allowed us to recognize that everything can be challenged. If you can challenge what was considered to be the most basic guarantor of normalcy, right? Then you can challenge anything. You can challenge capitalism. You know, you can see your way to a future beyond the kind of obscene capitalist framework that has formed and shaped our lives. So I'm excited. Things look a lot. Those of you who are young may not feel this, but things will look a lot more hopeful to me. It's the young people who represent the future. And so they are the ones who have to take the leadership. They are the ones who have to lead us into the next phase. And I guess as I get older, I realize how important it is for us to imagine ourselves as something more than our own individual lives, that we're connected with people who came before us, and we will be connected to people who come after us. So it's our responsibility to do the work that will, and the responsibility of younger people too, to make sure that you do the work that will keep the ideas alive, that will keep the possibility of freedom alive, because it's not going to happen tomorrow. We know that. But it can happen. It could happen sometime in the future. Well, I don't think we will ever actually reach that point that we can call freedom. Because what's exciting is that on the road, we notice that things are so much more complicated, you know? So I'm excited about, you know, what you will discover in the future. No one could have predicted 20 years ago that trans movements would be so important to social justice today. No one could have predicted that. And so I see us expanding the terrain of freedom. And I'm imagining that in the future, we will have movements to protect animals that will become much more widespread. We'll have a different relation. We'll experience our relationship to those with whom we share the planet in very different ways. And then there are all of those freedom ideas that I can't even imagine. But I know that in the future, they will emerge. And so so I'm excited. It's actually, you know, it's not that bad to be old. It isn't. As long as you maintain that kind of perspective and vision that allows you to feel connected to both those who are younger and those who are older, those who came before us and those who will come after us many generations into the future.
The legendary activist and scholar Dr. Angela Davis, professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. I spoke with her in October in Washington, D.C. at Busboys and Poets. To see a transcript or the video or audio podcast of the interview, go to democracynow.org. That does it for today's show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Charina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, and Libby Rainey. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ariel Boone, Vesta Godars, and Carl Markser. And to our camera crew, John Randolph, Kieran Meadows, Anna Osbeck, and Matt Ely. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Happy holidays.
And it is 5:12. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The news is off tonight. At 5:30, we will be hearing Lessons from a Radical Model. At 6 o'clock, Labor Radio. And 6:30, Prison Pipeline. Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland. And we'll get to where we're going with some John Coltrane. Thank you.
Thank you. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Inside Gaza, an evening with Dr. Clyde Ferris on Sunday, January 13th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. Dr. Clyde Ferris, an orthopedic surgeon from West Lynn, recently returned from a trip to Gaza where he worked with a team of Palestinian orthopedic specialists. Dr. Ferris will describe the type of injuries he saw and the conditions inside what has been called the largest open-air prison on Earth. Again, that's Inside Gaza, an evening with Dr. Clyde Ferris on Sunday, January 13th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in on Monday, December 31st at 8 p.m. to celebrate the Late Night Programmers and the Night Owl community of KBOO as the last event of our 50th anniversary year.
Thanks for listening to me.
That means it's time to go.
Well, it's very pleasant to have seen you all here.
Embracing. There's only one you.
From 8 to 10 p.m., we'll focus on late night programming in the early 70s through the early 90s.
10 to midnight will be hosted by many of the current late night programmers of KBOO.
As we celebrate KBOO and the new year together. More information about the late night anniversary program December 31st from 8 to midnight can be found at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at kboo.fm. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at kboo.fm/grantwriter2018.
And it is 5:29 here at KBOO Portland. We will now be listening to Lessons from a Radical Model, taking the place of the news this evening. Labor Radio will be on at 6 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
From WGDR, I'm Jackie Batten. And this is Lessons from a Radical Model, episode 38, The Star Poet.
I always hope that folks who are interacting with my work hear that I'm victorious, right? Like, I couldn't talk about it in the same way if I didn't win, you know what I mean? I won. So I'm hoping that that's the listening that you have. I'm in no way a tragic figure.
That was Dominique Christina. Dominique is a writer, performer, educator, and activist. She holds 5 National Poetry Slam titles in the 3 years she's competed, including the 2014 and 2012 Women of the World Slam Champion and 2011 National Poetry Slam Champion. She is currently the only person to have won 2 Women of the World Poetry Championships. She is also the 2013 National Underground Poetry Individual Competition Champion and the 2013 Southern Fried Poetry Slam Champion. She is presently an actor and writer for the HBO series High Maintenance Season 2. Dominique Christina has performed across the country, opening for Cornell West and performing for the Trayvon Martin and Emmett Till families in Washington, D.C. at the Shiloh Baptist Church. On this week's episode of Lessons from a Radical Model, we'll hear pieces Dominique performed in the Haybarn Theater on the Plainfield campus of Goddard College in January of 2018. Here's Dominique.
As an introduction to me, I think I need to read a poem that I wrote after a phone conversation with someone who's been in my life for 27 years. We met in high school, and we couldn't be more different. He's an engineer, and he's rigid. lovely, but rigid. But he was describing the day that we met, and he was describing me. And I was destabilized by his description because In fact, what he was describing was the hologram that I'd created to mask all the stuff that I was lugging into that first interaction that he didn't perceive of. And it felt like this persistent lie between us, and I felt out of integrity with him and with myself. So when we got off the phone, I just started writing all of the things that I was bringing into that initial interaction, you know, that he didn't perceive of. And so, and it really has a lot in it. And so I'm thinking that this should be the first poem that I read to give you a sense of who's in front of you, and then we'll dig into some other stuff. Does that feel okay? When we met, the ghost of a girl who looked like me stepped out, fashioned a tiara from kitchen knives, pulled me from behind the gravestones, and whispered your name. And these looted bones, this storied body, emptied out of whimsy, this burned out church, masquerading as girl, this split tongue, this wolf, this malarial witch walloped in curses, this torn slip, this menagerie of bruises, this locust-ridden Easter dress, this jagged constellation of wingless birds, heretical, unholy, this oozing thorn, the arsenic I almost ate. This wicked, willful bitch, unblessed by God, beholden to all my sins, the death music of my childhood, the sum of sorcery and rotting dollhouses, spent shell casings on schoolyards and weekends with rapists, the sum of stepfather's hands and locked playrooms. The devil in the details, the wasps in my belly, the puppy Leo killed in front of me, the gun my grandfather loaded the same day, dead dogs in the dumpster, the promiscuity of everybody but me, the days I overthrew death, the day Dennis and Marcus didn't, the murdered children I played with, my grandmother's premonitions, my stepbrother's abuses, my sister's absence, the razor blades in the Halloween candy, the funerals that took all morning, the dress they buried Jakeisha in, the crunch of Carla's bones under that car, her blood running down the sewage drain, and the way I forgot all about it the next day. The priest who was molesting her, the nuns who beat me, the rosaries that hung from their necks, the twin girls next door with third-degree burns, their mama who lit the match, the everyday crucifixions, the pornography in my best friend's basement, the cases of beer her father drank, the way he beat his wife after, the boys, like kettles whistling, who murdered with indifference, the way I still hung out with them on weekends. And the time I fingered a pistol, the sum of chalk outlines and girls assaulted in basements, the alchemical concert of new breasts and rapacious uncles, Gerald, Junior, Richard, Alex, Raymond, how each tried to steal something from me, how I held on to every offense and learned how to fight when four girls held me down. How religious the blood in my mouth, the bruises on my neck the next day like first place ribbons, the wild I grew. The fangs too, the hunger, I met you on a Monday in a sudden choir of ungoverned wind, thickening to spring, banged in the back of my throat, thundered out, declared me somehow holy, somehow worthy of walking up and telling you my name.
It's the first one.
Deep breath. You're going to be just fine. We all are. We all are. I always hope that folks who are interacting with my work hear that I'm victorious, right? Like, couldn't talk about it in the same way if I didn't win. You know what I mean? I won. So I'm hoping that that's the listening that you have. I'm in no way a tragic figure. This poem is called Stones, and I had watched, I fell down the rabbit hole that is the internet, and found myself watching a video of a woman being stoned to death in Saudi. And she had on a blue burqa, she was completely covered, and the video was, you know, close to an hour long. And I watched the whole thing. And I was devastated by it. And I have to point out something to you. I am a person who is entirely acquainted with violence. My family of origin is filled with amazing, brilliant, overly educated, overachieving, medal-winning, book-authoring, miracle, like walk-on-water people. But I spent 4 years in my stepfather's house, and so from the age of 4 to the age of 8, I got very acquainted with violence. And as a result of that relationship, the relationship that I have with violence, it takes a lot for me to be, I don't have a neurotypical reaction to it anymore, you know? I can remember being in Toronto with my tour partner 2 years ago. We were in a bar after our show, and a fight broke out. These two men just started walloping each other. And my tour partner, like, you know, spilled her beer and was like trying to get the hell out of there. And I just kept on eating my little black bean burger. Like, it just didn't mean anything to me because I don't have all of the normal responses to violence have been rooted out. But I was so undone by this video. And she was covered the entire time. Like, we were spared the horror of knowing, seeing what was actually happening to her underneath that burqa. And so when I have a big reaction like that, I usually end up writing about it. But then I was stopped by the fact that I am in America, and we love othering that part of the world and the things that happen there, and going, oh, yep, they are. That is just awful, you know? And I didn't want to contribute to that. And so I waited, and then I found myself in Baltimore when Freddie Gray died. And I hung out with kids almost the entire time that I was there. And we were walking by these row houses that were abandoned, which is the story of Baltimore. And these kids told me a story about a girl who had been lured inside the row house that I was walking by, and had been gang raped and murdered, and that they'd used the stones from the house that was falling, you know, in disrepair to entomb her. And I thought, well, there it is. There's the connective tissue. I can't talk about what happened in Saudi without also talking about what happens right here. And so this is Stones. Also, for the heathens in the room, very quickly, who was Mary Magdalene? I'm a heathen too, no judgment. But who was she?
Prostitute.
Mm-hmm. And she was going to be what? What happened? What did Jesus do for her?
Saved her life.
Because she was about to be stoned, right? She is a reference in this poem, so I have to make mention of that and make sure those of you who have stopped going to Sunday school a long time ago knew who that was. Part one, Saudi. They take her to a place where the rubble already is. Today, decapitation would be a mercy. The strip-mined skies strung hazily overhead, carrion-peppered hillsides, vultures hounding the crime scene. Convert the mountain, then. This bedrock of bones, the pothole graves like eyes plucked out, a gaunt, bare-legged hyena limps over, waits on the promise of a meal. The woman is no one's wife. Curated that ill with an affair, they say. The man received his lashes. Her crime, they say, required the slow surrender of flesh. She's not without revelation, attends her own torture soundlessly, sanctuaried, wonders how long it will take and if she will be remembered. Some people work too hard to be remembered. But would you know Christ without a halo of thorns? And how Jezebel became her name after the dogs fed from her flesh? She is a woman. She is a sinner. I'm being redundant now. An old insult. Extrusive, igneous rock sacraments pulled from dust and weaponized. They say that is worship too. What, after all, is holy? Her heart, a blood corsage, unticking now. Every time a stone is thrown, the blue burqa goes purple from the inside. A sudden deluge plumes from underneath, creates patterns that are almost beautiful, or maybe that's just what I tell myself. Can't see her face, but we know. The massacre, underneath sky blue lace, blue, gone purple, purple is really red, but we won't know it. Her death is a spectacle, but not her dying. No shouting now. This is the part where men wait for a woman to know she's been murdered. It can take a long time. She isn't moving. There was twitching before. I looked at it and called it leaving. The men with stones called it staying. Picked up more rocks, threw so many, a dust cloud shot up, and for just a second, they couldn't see well enough to keep going. A mercy. Just before the lights go out, I imagine the woman whispering, "Mary Magdalene, Mary Magdalene." But no savior appears. Just a hailstorm of bricks, a concert of contusions, the unmendable flesh and men, wild with the fever of a fresh kill, peering into the junk-heaped body, shouting, "God is great, the murder, after all, is scripture." Part two. Baltimore. The girl has a mama who ain't ever really been a mama. In and out of jail since forever. Heroin got her. Same old story. The girl was never really a girl. Can't pull that off anywhere in the world without a blood sacrifice, and Baltimore is gonna make you mean it. But sometimes the day is long in the right way. Fresh patties from the Jamaican spot, radio on, playing what sounds like June. Nobody's flexing too tough. Sunrise does not have a body in it. Sunset comes in like it does in other places that don't sizzle so much with war. The girl met a boy who looked like a life, a future even. Away from the broken songs of September, away from the crack needles, the dope fiends, the denunciation of green and gold, away from the walled city, the daily cruelties that slip in, quiet and private as a dream. He looked like someplace. But the streets in West Baltimore don't lie. They lend their darkness to whoever needs it. It's autumn, but it's cold. So assume winter anyway. She follows the boy into the house, abandoned now, screens popped loose, boarded windows, kitchen burned out, inside three other boys who look like no place at all. One says, "She'll do just fine." And she sees it now, knows how it goes. They say, "Girl," but they mean sacrifice. Boys repeat the blunders of their fathers. Her daddy told her that once. She sees it. They'll run a train, take it around and around the track. She'll walk the long way home till she can feel her legs again, till the blood dries out dark as fudge. She knows what happens now. The inevitability of it is what's exhausting. The boys take her and take her. They imitate the house. Vacant, cold, keeping hell. Over and over again, a new insult. She thinks it will be over soon. There's nothing left to bleed for. The last boy buttons his jeans, wipes semen and the salt of her off with long, slender fingers, dusted gray, looks down and says, "She saw our faces, man. She can't live." After that, a crucifixion. Soul uncoupled from flesh, the clumsy slaughter, first the beating, hands around the neck, the body jerking away from consciousness, the anguish of girl to ghost. They finally settle on burning. Light a match and watch the flame stretch her skin until it pops. Bad smell, black smoke, somebody might see. Get the stones, the ones the house spit out in its decay. Smother the smolder, bury the girl. Get the hell out before somebody sees. Nobody's gonna miss her. That's the way it is. West Baltimore knows such burials are prehistoric. We say barbaric, but we mean tradition. Part 3, everywhere. God said, man said, in either case, a woman dies. Women, meet me underground. We are never divided from heaven. We costumed in frailty, we impossible, we miracle, we dead and gone, we here and now, we the leftover sky, we ancestral and hungry, they the gun, they the bullet, we the wound it leaves, the stones they used could have been cathedrals. This could have been a prayer song. I would have liked it that way. Instead, I stare at my daughter most nights and whisper, "Mary Magdalene, Mary Magdalene." When she wakes, she finds doves on her windowsill and a pile of amputated hands clutching stones.
This is Lessons from a Radical Model. More poetry from Dominique Christina when we return.
Been religious. Instead, my mama showered me in kisses. 13 with a big dream. Daddy said I could be anything. So I looked to the stars, found an acoustic guitar, started learning, wrote a couple songs, and people heard them. Now they sang along. My friends used to say, "I bet you can't wait for the fame. Everyone's gonna know your face, mate." Let me talk specifically. Don't mean to me, I wanna keep bits of me to myself. I don't need your publicity all up in my business. That right there is a sickness. Keep it to yourselves. Fall out of the sky. I've got stars in my eyes. I've had stars in my eyes for many years. Wow, I was showed how I was grown into the woman that I am now. Think of me as a blank sheet of paper. My life is mine. I am the creator. You don't own me. You're not my commentator. Oh, child. See, I once had an idol. I got her voice on a vinyl. And then she turned suicidal. Well, you see, this business is all about survival of the fittest. If you don't go viral, you should quit it. I am the revival of the unfinished. You're my witness.
Proud of Me from Mahalia. Welcome back to Lessons from a Radical Model, episode 38, The Star Poet. We continue exploring pieces from writer, performer, educator, and activist Dominique Christina, who performed in the Haybarn Theater on the Plainfield campus of Goddard College in January of 2018.
There was a boy very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far, very far, over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
It's the year of living dangerously. I'm 16, and I'm trying to lose my virginity quickly to somebody with soft hands. Eager to let go of makeshift piety, I'm looking for songs and slow dances. Tell my nerve endings to be patient. Mark my calendar to watch for the subterranean dance of bloodletting and brown skin bending willfully under cotton sheets, hoping this boy has not grown his bones into tools for bludgeoning the few bits of girlishness left in me, that have not forgotten what tenderness can feel like in the inevitable cruelty of adolescence. I'm starving. There's an unfamiliar tremor in my hip. My navel is man-made lake. What it cannot hold runs over, collects beneath me. I'm glad for the distraction. My hymen applauds the first consensual contact she has ever known. She will begin the arduous ritual of disremembering the one who came before our stargazing. My hands are fisted. This is habitual. It's going to take years for them to open. I will forgive that. He is smiling in my ear. I can hear those pretty white teeth. He did not know redemption could quiver so pink. I did not know redemption could quiver so pink. It's dawn now. And there are 1,000 poems waiting in the space between my cheek and his collarbone. I'll write them down later. They are mine for the rest of my life. The soft refrains of forgiveness that chase the memories of a pedophile to dust. Come back, moon. You and I share the same story. Glory be to the girl who goes back for her body. He will sleep through all my epiphanies and hallelujahs. I will forget that. Unaccustomed to bones being so loose, my knees are waiting for instructions. They have not been told to fight back or fend off. I stroke them into silence, tell them they are relieved of that duty. This boy is different. A daywalker who laughs in his sleep. My forehead is red from his kiss only. Molested children love so well or forget so quickly. He's dreaming now. Left hand pinning me against him safe. He does not know how often I bled in the arms of another. How the scratch and pull of the word no kept daylight from coming. Too short a word for some to hear. It moves through the mouth too quickly to be considered. But I have not uttered that with him. I'm stargazing. I'm just gonna watch him sleep to the sound of yesterday dying in the bend of his elbow.
When he wakes, he'll catch me staring. I am a star.
Dominique Christina is a writer, performer, educator, and activist. She holds 5 National Poetry Slam titles in the 3 years she's competed, including the 2014 and 2012 Women of the World Slam Champion and 2011 National Poetry Slam Champion. She is presently an actor and writer for the HBO series High Maintenance Season 2. You can find more information about Dominique's work at www.dominiquechristina.com. You've been listening to Lessons from a Radical Model, Episode 38, The Star Poet. This program is brought to you by WGDR, Goddard College Community Radio, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Music you heard included SZA with Go Gina and Proud of Me from Mahalia. For WGDR, I'm Jackie Batten, your host. Tune in next week for more Lessons from a Radical Model. I hope you'll join us.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
So this is Christmas.
On Monday, December 24th, Prison Pipeline hosts will feature your holiday messages to your loved ones in prison, as well as greetings from prisoners for those on the outside. Email your message to kboppc@gmail.com or snail mail your holiday message to KBOO, Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Then tune in on Monday, December 24th at 6:30 p.m. Again, that's kboppc@gmail.com or mail KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And happy holidays from the Prison Pipeline Collective every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
Hi, this is John Shuck, host of Progressive Spirit. This week I speak with Dr. Aisha Juman about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen.
You know, what is sad for me as a Yemeni American, it's heartbreaking for me when I go to Yemen. And what the people see, they say without the U.S. support, the Saudi cannot conduct this war. So they consider this war an American war.
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
KBOO Portland.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host this evening, and our topic is Amazon Workers Unite. And we have here with us tonight 2 Amazon warehouse workers whose names will be withheld to protect them from management retaliation, and their voices will be distorted. Ha-ha. So let's just start out with an overview here. Amazon is the largest e-commerce marketplace in the world. Amazon.com was founded by Jeff Bezos in 1994 and started as an online bookstore, but later diversified into selling video downloads and streaming, MP3 downloads and streaming, audiobook downloads and streaming, software, video games, electronics, apparel, furniture, food, toys, jewelry. And in 2015, Amazon surpassed Walmart as the most valuable retailer in the United States. Amazon is the third most valuable public company in the